Today's service is a little bit of a surprise because when Terry initially asked me to come and be with you, she was inviting me for December 6th for the... and a new image for the gospel. When that all started creating itself, and then she realized that it was today, Communion Sunday, a formal service that I was really needed for, I came to the conclusion that God was inspiring something unusual. So we're just having ourselves a holly jolly little time with this message, and I hope it's as meaningful to you as it has been to me to create it. Titled Meaningful Gifts, we will share the story of Barrington Bunny in a few moments. A millionaire wanted his son to understand that the world was made up of those who had great happiness in the world because they never wanted for anything, and those who lived in unhappiness because their struggles were never ending. He decided that it would be a good idea to ask one of his lowest paid workers if his son could stay for a weekend. And the employee agreed. When the weekend was over, the millionaire picked up his son, and on the way home, he asked his son what he learned about how other people lived. "I learned a lot," the little boy said as he sat with his shoulders slumped. "We have a dog, and they have three dogs and a couple of cats, and they have chickens and ducks and a donkey. We have a swimming pool, but they have a great big lake. We have a deck, but they have a yard that stretches for miles and miles. And at dinner, they all sit around the table and laugh and talk together." The millionaire sat in silence, listening to his son, and then his son said, "I guess the lesson I learned, Dad, is how poor we really are." Today's talk is about meaningful gifts. And in The Waltons, John Boy discovers that he wants to be a writer. And that is not a very popular idea in a community where farming is the way people make their livings. And in a really well-loved scene, I've talked to a couple friends about it, and they remember seeing this. John Boy's father affirms John Boy's potential career path by giving him a simple gift at Christmas: paper and pencils. And the question about who John Boy was resolved in that simple present. At its best, the ceremony of gift giving really does invite us to know ourselves more clearly. We all have a loving desire to give gifts, and we have a desire to feel loved and to fully receive gifts and to be understood and loved by our community. When I was 5 years old, I received one of the most meaningful gifts of my life. What that gift was, a simple rubber frog, is not as significant as where the gifts came from. That simple rubber frog and the dollhouse and the jewelry box that came to my older sisters were hand-me-overs from my father's boss. Knowing the circumstances of our family, finances made much worse by my father's alcoholism. Those previously loved items were given as meaningful gifts that prevented three young children from having no Christmas gifts. They kept a mother from losing hope and a father from being doomed to shame. As Christians celebrating communion as we are today, we are partaking in one of the most meaningful gifts from the Christian heritage. This symbolic breaking of the bread is really the breaking of those things that would separate us from anyone else. And when we take the bread and the cup, we are celebrating the bonds that we share with all other living beings. Holy Communion represents this holy union of the divine in all people. And always the most meaningful gifts are about these bonds, this community, and that symbol of the divine as we lose our ambiguity and we celebrate who we really are. So instead of a traditional scripture reading today, I'm going to share the story of Barrington Bunny. Hence the bunny on the altar. This comes from The Way of the Wolf by Martin Bell, The Gospel in New Images. It was Christmas Eve, and Barrington Bunny was very sad. All of the other animals in the forest were having Christmas parties. But as far as Barrington Bunny knew, he was the only bunny in the forest. The squirrels told Barrington that he could not come to their party because he was a bunny and he couldn't climb trees. The beavers told him that he couldn't come to their party because he was a bunny and he couldn't swim. So Barrington just sat in the snow and cried. The story says a great silver wolf came along. He was large and strong, and his eyes flashed fire. He was the most beautiful animal Barrington had ever seen. "Why are you sitting here in the snow?" the wolf asked Barrington. "And why are you crying?"
"Because," Barrington answered, "I have no family and it's Christmas and everyone's having a Christmas party and they said I couldn't come because I can't climb trees and I can't swim and bunnies are just no good for anybody or anything."
Unaffected by Barrington's drama, the wolf said, "That's not true. Bunnies have fur, and they're warm, and they can hop."
"What good is that?" said Barrington.
"It's very good indeed," said the silver wolf, "because yours are gifts that are given, free gifts with no strings attached. But every gift is given for a reason. Someday you'll see why it's good to hop and be warm and furry."
"But it's Christmas Eve and I don't have any family. I'm all alone."
"You do have a family," said the wolf. "All of the animals in the forest are your family."
"Is that true?"
"That is the truth." And then the silver wolf disappeared into the woods in the blink of an eye. So Barrington thought, "Since I have the gift of hopping, I'll find a fine stick and I'll hop over to the beavers and I'll leave it." And he did. He left a note from a member of your family. Next, he found some dead leaves and grass to make the squirrel's nest warmer, and he took that over and left it at the bottom of the tree. He left a note from a member of your family. Soon a blizzard came. There's always a blizzard in a good story. And Barrington thought he better get himself on home before he lost his way. And then he realized it was too late. He already, from all the hopping and crying and hopping, he had gotten lost. As he was wandering lost, he heard a little squeaking, and then he heard crying, and he realized right near there, there's a small, little, tiny baby field mouse. And Barrington hopped over. "What's wrong?" he asked. I'm lost and I'm afraid I will freeze to death," the little mouse cried. "You won't freeze," said Barrington Bunny. "I'm a bunny and bunnies are very warm and furry. You stay right here with me and I'll cover you up." Barrington lay on top of that little bunny, that little mouse, and hugged him tight. The little mouse felt himself surrounded by warm fur. He whimpered for a little while, and then, snug and warm, he fell asleep. The next morning, the field mouse was there with his heart beating. But his family found him asleep in the snow, safe and warm, beneath the carcass of a dead bunny. The mice were so excited that they didn't even think to question where the bunny had come from or who he was. As for the beavers and the squirrels, they're still wondering which member of their family had left the little gifts for them on Christmas Eve. Parenthetically, as my personal faith expanded beyond the narrow limits of Christian theology that I grew up with, I was challenged by the fact that the bunny died. And I didn't like the end of the story, and this is the first time I've shared this story publicly in over 20 years. This is the way the last of that story is written. After the field mice had left with their little boy, Barrington Bunny's frozen body simply lay there in the snow. There was no sound except for the howling wind, and no one noticed the great silver wolf who came and stood by that bunny's body. And that silver wolf stood there without moving all Christmas Day. Then when night came, the wolf disappeared again into the forest. Today I'm able to forgive the misunderstanding that love means we have to sacrifice ourselves. Today I stand in witness to the meaningful gifts that are in that story. The first being the dark night of the soul that Barrington Bunny was going through. I can certainly relate to the pain of thinking that we have nothing worth to offer. And it can be totally discombobulating to our egoic identity when we give way to the opening of the reality that we are connected to all living beings, not just those who are like us, or even to those who do like us. The second gift that we see in this gospel story is that we, like Barrington Bunny, remember our true value. You may have seen the quotation about a friend being someone who knows the song in your heart and sings it back to you when you have forgotten the words. We give this gift of divine vision to one another by looking at that spark of sacredness and saying what we see rather than echoing the voice of criticism often heard in the world. Barrington's teaching us we can respond lovingly to the needs of others without needing recognition as the role of a giver. Just simply leaving a note, a free gift with no strings attached from a member of your family. And we can attest to the fact that nothing is more precious than sharing our warmth with another. Barrington's ability to do that flowed from his awareness of his own gift. A bunny is very furry and warm. An awareness of the gift that you are allows you to share freely. Although I still struggle with the identification some Christians have with the death of Christ, it's undeniable that we get over ourselves in order to really give our gift. I'm going to share a little bit from a book, The World's Religions, by Houston Smith. Certainly, the most impressive thing about the teachings of Jesus is not that he taught them, but that he appears to have lived them. His concern was what people thought of God, God's nature, and God's will for their lives. It's impossible to read what Jesus said about selflessness without sensing how free of pride he was himself. Similarly, with sincerity. Bless you. Jesus liked people, and they liked him in turn. They loved him. They loved him intensely, and they loved him in numbers. We have seen that he ignored the barriers that the culture of his day erected between people. He hated injustice because of what it did. Above all, he hated hypocrisy. In the end, it seemed to those who knew Jesus best that here was a man in whom the human ego had disappeared. Years ago, as I stepped out into the precarious world in the role of an interfaith minister, a healer, things that people would ask me what you do, and I would go, well, and after a little bit of stuttering. But I will admit, when I stepped out, I was given a significant message from God. You will never be asked to give up your physical life. However, you will die many egoic deaths. It's true for most of us, maybe all of us here today. And I would invite us all in this time of Advent to ponder what are some of the most memorable gifts you've received in your life. And give yourself the opportunity also to identify some of the most memorable gifts that you've given. And a question that comes from the story of Barrington Bunny, to notice who are those in our forest that we felt were not our family? Or where are the places that you felt you did not fit or were not welcome? As you remember your own value, think about what phrase fills your heart. When it came to be with a schedule confusion that we were going to be celebrating communion this morning. I thought it would be meaningful to share communion from my tradition, which is Buddhism, and help us see what an expanded view of the gift of communion might be. Rather than simply seeing this bread and this cup, we're able to receive the gift of the full blessing of remembrance. And instead of just the second Sunday of the month during communion, thinking of that gift as often as you eat or drink. Gifts are not only items that you purchase or you make. They're not just things that are wrapped and delivered. Those gifts of time and attention and prayer and respect, all of the fruits, what we call the fruits of the Spirit, the gifts of the Spirit. These are some of the most meaningful gifts, and they're not tangible at all. And the most meaningful gift in the Christian tradition, the gift of Holy Communion, may be to make everything that you eat or drink a remembrance of the divine within you. When I came to that idea, I thought, oh my gosh, we have to rethink fast food. We have to give up binge drinking. And never again will anyone talk about a diet. And as an interfaith minister, I have really been fascinated by first the denominations, and this little book I picked up years ago, it's by George Vandelman, What I Like About the Lutherans, the Baptists, the Methodists, the Charismatics, the Catholics, Our Jewish Friends, the Adventists, Rescuers of Neglected Truth. And I'm reading just a few words out of a section that come from my tradition, from John Wesley, from the United Methodist. Have you ever wondered why we have so many denominations? We tend to follow our leaders to believe everything they believe, but little more, to advance no farther than they do before they die, to draw a circle around their teachings, and form a creed. Can you see how this happened in the history of the church? When God introduced advanced light, neglected truth, in the days of Martin Luther, the Catholic Church refused it. So the Lutheran Church was born. When God brought more light with the Anabaptists, most Lutherans did not accept that. The Baptist Church emerged. And when additional truth came through John Wesley, many Calvinists and others turned him down. So we have the Methodists. The story goes on and on. Will it ever end? We shall see. In Anatomy of the Spirit, Carolyn Mace, building on wisdom from Hindu, Christian, Kabbalah, all of these traditions, points out that the seven sacraments correspond to the energy anatomy that are called chakras. And the second, called the sacral chakra, is tied to communion. Carolyn Mace says that it's about receiving or bestowing an expression of grace that represents holy union with the divine and with all people. Imagine every meal you share being recognized as sacred. Welcome any morsel you ingest as the body of Christ. Drink only the cup of the new covenant. Thich Nhat Hanh is a Vietnamese Buddhist monk. Many of you know him. He's a teacher, author, poet. He's a peace activist. And reading from Living Buddha, Living Christ, quote, "Mindful eating is an important practice. It nourishes awareness in us. In Buddhist monasteries, we eat our meals in silence to make it easier to give our full attention to the food and to one another, to other members of the community who are present. And we chew each morsel of food thoroughly, at least 30 times, to help us truly be in touch with it. Eating this way is good for digestion. In the Jewish tradition, the sacredness of mealtime is very much emphasized. The entire world, all the good things in life, belong to God. So when you enjoy something, you think of God and enjoy it in God's presence. Christianity is a kind of continuation of Judaism, as is Islam. In Christianity, when we celebrate the Eucharist, we do it in the same spirit of piety, in the same mindfulness, aware that we are alive. We are enjoying dwelling in the present moment. If we allow ourselves to touch our bread deeply, we become reborn because our bread is life itself. Eating it deeply, we touch the sun, the clouds, the earth, and everything in the cosmos. We touch life, and we touch the kingdom of God." Claudia is here today, and when we are on retreat, we're always instructed to bring our attention to the food with all of our senses, the taste, the touch, the sight, the smell, the hearing, and our thinking mind. And we're invited to chew each piece until it dissolves completely before swallowing and then taking the next bite. And if our concentration wanders, we're just simply instructed to breathe the name of what we're eating. Bread, toast, apple. And then continue chewing. We're also invited to take the liquid into our mouth and resist the urge to swallow, just watching that impulse. And watch the impulse fade, and then in an attitude of sincere gratefulness, swallow. Reading on in that little section, what I like about. Let me give you something to think about. Is it possible that there may be advanced light for us to follow? Whatever our denominational ties, you and I are free. Free to do whatever we will as truth goes marching on. God is still speaking. We can refuse to grow beyond the beliefs of our ancestors, or we can choose for ourselves to walk in the light that continually shines in the darkness. Let us celebrate communion today as a way of inviting the sacred to express itself through each one of us at every moment, as life's most meaningful